Good evening and welcome to the November meeting of the Board of Supervisors Economic Development Committee. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge our new county attorney, Leo Rogers. His first day on the job is today, and so he gets to join us tonight at the Economic Development Committee. It's the first of many, many evenings you will spend in this room. Hopefully this one will be relatively painless, at least compared to others. The first item on our agenda, we're going to switch things around a little bit. We have Bill Knight and the team from our staff, as well as Beth Erickson, to discuss sponsorship of the 2015 World and Police Fire Games. I understand that Bill and his folks made the trip to our last board meeting and came all the way here, only to find out that the item had been sent to this committee. So I apologize for that extra time you get to spend with us, but we're happy to have you back this evening to talk a little bit about the World Police and Fire Games and a potential sponsorship from Loudoun County. I'm going to turn it over to Buddy Reiser to introduce the item.
Great. As you mentioned, Fairfax 2015 has requested that Loudoun County consider a $250,000 sponsorship for next year's World Police and Fire Games. There's not much to add to the item from my standpoint, but I know that Bill had a couple of clarifications from the item that he wanted to address before we take questions.
Okay, Bill.
Great, thank you. And I appreciate the time to discuss this. Just for clarifications on the item, these gentlemen and Beth have done a terrific job in sort of documenting the various things, but there are a few things. As time goes on, as we get closer to the event, we get more information and get more clarity. And so I just wanted to bring some of that to the table, and we can incorporate that in the documentation if it were to go forward. Real quickly, that we are in 9 separate jurisdictions altogether. This event is enormous. It's over 12,000 athletes, as it's said. But the competition is in 9 different jurisdictions. Approximately 70% of that is in Fairfax County. Fairfax County won the right to host these events back in 2009 when they were awarded. And at that time, they knew it was a regional event. I don't think they knew the extent to which some of the venues were going to be located outside of the county, but we have now settled on where those venues are. And interestingly enough, and it's a real credit to Loudoun County, because you have quality venues. We have 8 total venues in Loudoun County. And what that brings is approximately 30% of the athletes will actually be based here in Loudoun County. In other words, their primary sport will take place here, and all of the housing is geared toward, their primary sport. So I wanted to clarify that with 8 different nine different jurisdictions. 8 venues in Loudoun, which it does say. The hotel numbers as a result of those venues being relocated to Loudoun have increased substantially in Loudoun, and we expect to use quite a few of those. In fact, I guess the document says that we've increased to 10,400. It's actually officially, I'm going to plug in 12,500. Officially, it's about 4 short of 13,000, is what my guys have quoted back to me, my accommodation folks. So the potential, is quite large there as well. And I wanted to clarify a potential concern. If I were sitting in your shoes and I read this document, I would be concerned about the item of overtime, way blown out of proportion. These games, as big as they are from an athlete participation perspective and from a number of sports perspective, they are not the Olympic Games. They are, in fact, business as usual at 7 of these 8 venues. And the reason I say 7 is because one of them is not an existing venue. One of them is a cycling hill climb that is, the venue is basically constructed on one lane of a road. So essentially at those 7 existing venues, it really is business as usual. I would say that outdoor soccer may require some additional traffic coordination, so that there might be a little bit to look at there with overtime. there might be, and there's definitely with the cycling hill climb, it's only one day. It's in the starts early in the morning, and what you do is you close one lane of a two-lane street, but that will require, you know, law enforcement to assist in that effort, and we are fully prepared because that is a competition-related expense to pick up that expense. But again, you know, the bulk of the activity here is going to be business as usual. You guys host huge youth soccer tournaments on a regular basis. It's not that much different. And I know there's concern about traffic and that sort of thing. The time of year, I would just mention this real quick because I know you guys need to move along. But school is out. Vacations are starting. Business travel is lowered, which opens up a lot of hotel rooms. If you look at the traffic, you probably take 15 or 20,000 cars off the road as a result of school being out in the time of year, and we maybe put back 5,000 on the road. So keep that in mind. Even when Olympic Games comes to a community, the traffic gets blown out of proportion, but that's a whole other subject.
We're having that discussion too, though.
Yes, we are. I'm very supportive of Russ Ramsey and all his efforts. He's actually on our honorary board as well. We're very fortunate to have him.
Anything else?
I was just looking to see. Yes, one last thing. Of the eight venues, only one of them is active on the 4th of July and the 5th of July. And that's important because resources are stretched on the 4th in particular.
Which venue is that?
It's a good thing. It's indoor soccer. So it's actually the Sportsplex, Dulles Sportsplex.
Okay. Well, let me open up to the committee for questions. I'm going to start with one. I think this is maybe more, I'll just get to the point. From the perspective of the board, I guess the question we have is this is happening anyway. The venues have been selected. They're going to be here. The impacts you just described are going to come to Loudoun, regardless of whether we contribute financially or not. So what is the value add for Loudoun at this point to come in with some level of sponsorship?
Well, I think the value add is enormous. I mean, I kind of feel like as the event guy coming to town, I'm the guy that laid the golden egg because I've relocated a lot of the venues up here. But the fact of the matter is to actually engage in promoting Loudoun County through these games and all that these games involve, because literally there will be 35, roughly, 1,000 visitors in the community. So you take the 12,000 in the region. You take the 12,000 athletes, and they bring approximately two people with them, friends and family. So it's quite a substantial number of people to market to. You know, let people know what Loudoun's all about, because you guys have so much to show off, and this is an enormous opportunity. These are, you know, as I like to say, these are potential ambassadors from around the world coming. I mean, they're public safety officers, law-abiding citizens coming to, you know, take in the National Capital Region. And, you know, I tell Russ Ramsey this, the same thing. You know, let's use this as a vehicle to help, you know, people to appreciate the National Capital Region and drive tourism and future tourism to this area.
Beth, what has the discussion been with the local hospitality folks in terms of some sort of a plan to take advantage of the visitors?
It's a great question. And I think it's important that while Fairfax County brought this event to Northern Virginia, we do recognize that Loudoun County is going to benefit from it. Part of the role of Visit Loudoun has been to work with our hotels and to, I guess, cross-hatch with where the venues are going to be to ensure that the hotels that are closest have the adequate room blocks set aside. And we're working very closely with them on a regular – we meet with them monthly to talk about this event. So we are very engaged with our hotel partners. I will say that they're holding a block of 10,000 rooms collectively, about 10,441 rooms. But I think we're going to start seeing some traction, I have understood probably soon, beginning of the year, on rooms being booked because people are waiting to book their vacation travel until the beginning of the year. So our hotels are, we're working with them. They're cautiously optimistic, and they're watching to see how this goes.
Okay. Supervisor Williams.
Sure. And thank you for coming, and thank you for getting us informed. And, Buddy, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit because I compliment you whenever we're at a data center, a ribbon cutting, or a groundbreaking. But, you know, I want you to give us a little guidance here. I've reviewed the cost-benefit analysis, and, yes, there is a large range of benefit, particularly to TOT funds that could come to the region. What value I really see on this is partnering with the other regions and solidifying that partnership, particularly with Fairfax. I want to make sure that we're partnering with them properly. The other side of this isn't just an economic development thing. We're coming into what, and the more it comes into light, the more challenging I think our budget season will be. So there's not necessarily a lot of money in our coffers to be used for sponsorship on an event that will come to Loudoun regardless. So I want to get your take, Buddy, on what, where you'd sell this, you know, not to put you on the spot, but let me know your kind of earnest thoughts on. I'll tell you, I would tend to think that the top key benefit for this would be about $35K in motion, the alternative motion two. And I, at this stage, and this goes, will go to the full committee depending on how the motion comes out, but that's kind of where I am currently, but wanted to get your take before that comes up.
Sure. And we've spent a lot of time working on this, probably for, you know, the better part of 6 months now, trying to come up with a good value proposition. And I think the value proposition isn't so much from a business development side as it is a community development and a tourism side. There's really one aspect of this from a business development side, and it's a rural business development. It's working with the wine growers and having them engaged as a partnership in the partnership campaign that they do as part of the games. Beyond that, we think that there is some value in engaging around some of the events and with C-level type executives. But beyond that, I don't know that I identify a lot of direct business development benefit to this program.
Okay. Thank you, Buddy. That's very helpful.
Supervisor Bonham.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for coming out tonight, out to the hinterland here in Loudoun. I think there's a great event. I'm absolutely thrilled that Northern Virginia is going to host this event. I appreciate all the work that went in the proposal. I did read the proposal. I think there's a lot of benefits to Loudoun. And if this were normal times, I think this would be a no-brainer. Unfortunately, as chairman of the Finance Committee, I've been getting a lot of briefings in the last month or two on where we're heading for our FY16 budget, and it's not a pretty picture right now. As a matter of fact, it's a really scary picture, and the problem is probably somewhere between $56 million and over $100 million, depending on what we see in a budget coming in. I realize that this item is proposing fund balance to be the funding source for this. Fund balance will be briefed next month in the December Finance Committee meeting where we'll really have a feel for where we think we are. Right now, I'm going to just throw out a number that is probably between $30 and $40 million. Problem we have, though, is the schools just slammed us with a totally unexpected item on their health care plan, which is way over $12 million that we may have to bail out and have no choice, and that's going to come from fund balance because I don't know where else it's going to come from. And we've been projecting fund balance in that budget to offset our capital, our debt service on the schools. So we are facing a very scary, grim financial picture, I think, for the first time that this board's been in office. And I see a lot of ways we can spend money and a lot of requests to spend money, but the timing of this just couldn't be worse from the standpoint of where we're going to go into the FY16 budget. And so when I look at the rooms, 1440 or whatever the number was, and the comparison from a TOT perspective, if we assumed every one of those rooms booked, that equates to about $81,000 generated in TOT. So we have to take it on faith that there's all these other benefits. Yeah, there's sales tax, but that goes to the Commonwealth. A little bit of it comes back to us in the form of transportation. It will have a multiplying effect in the local economy. I agree with all of that. But does that really bring the revenues back to get a true ROI for the county of the $250K? And I can't do the math to make it work up to that. So as much as I would like to support this, I'm not going to be able to do it just because of the situation that we're in right now. Do you want to entertain a motion, Mr. Chairman, or do you want
Let me just ask one additional question before that. There's two different room block numbers. So there's the number that had been blocked right now, 10,000, and then the Visit Loudoun estimate was actually 4,400. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a little bit more what the thinking is on those two numbers?
And that's getting back to working with the hotels to look at where the events are to make sure that we've got the adequate booking. So the first pass at the lead that went out was 4,400. It expanded to the 10,441.
What do you mean expanded to that?
Sure.
Let me explain the expansion because, yes, she's absolutely correct. You know, at the time, we had maybe three venues in Loudoun when that first request went out. We literally have assigned some pretty sizable venues to Loudoun, and when you take outdoor soccer in particular, it's 1,600 athletes alone. It's the single largest venue for athletes that we have in the entire games. Ice hockey is the largest sport participation, but it's split between four different venues in four different counties, including Loudoun. But soccer is the single largest. So we have put a lot more activity here, and as a result, our hotel strategy has always been to put people in hotels as close to their primary venue as possible.
Are they being assigned to those hotels, or are they choosing where to stay?
They choose where to stay, but they literally go onto our website and they book it through our website, and we have a accommodation site where they can actually click and it asks them, what is your primary sport? They click on that, and it comes back with the hotels closest to that sport venue. It's a well-orchestrated program, and it will drive people to stay where their venues are. And I would just add, and I had stated this earlier, I'm not sure, I mean, we're up to 13,000 on actually Loudoun County hotel rooms that are in our inventory currently.
How many hotel rooms are blocked system-wide, though, versus the number of athletes? Are you blocking more hotel rooms than you actually have athletes? There's duplication between counties?
System-wide, I think we're in the neighborhood of 60,000.
Okay. And there are nine jurisdictions total. Are the other eight jurisdictions sponsors of the event?
I'm sorry, let me finish the 60,000. That's room nights. You know, that's not
right.
So when you take 30,000 or 12,000 athletes, 30,000 games, family visitors,
right.
You know, they could stay over as long as 10 days. I think
right.
The average is more like six. So the 60,000, you know, is right in line.
Right.
I'm sorry, your next question?
The other jurisdictions, are they all sponsors, the other eight jurisdictions?
No, they're not. We are pursuing.
Same thing.
Well, it's not the same thing at all. Loudoun County has the second most amount of activity by far.
Okay. Well, the reason I was asking about the room nights is because the 35,000 that we have is coming from Visit Loudoun's estimate of what will be generated in TOT, but it's based on the 4,400 rooms in the block. So I'm trying to get to the bottom of how many rooms actually will get used to try to understand what the, if that's the basis, at least I'm hearing a little bit, that might be the basis for what we're thinking, then it's important that we understand how many rooms are going to be used. So, Beth.
Certainly. We have the two numbers in play, the 4,400 and then the 10,000 is what has recently been expanded to. You have in your documents, you have two numbers associated with the 4,400 room nights and then the 10,000, which would
right.
be the 81,000 in TOT. Generated of all of those rooms were used.
Okay.
And so I think that part of it is wondering, you know, how many rooms will be used. And that's, of course, the million-dollar question. And only time is going to be able to tell. And that's the tough part about this.
Well, we're on record pace with registrations. They're coming, and they're coming in droves. This is going to be an enormous event.
Have there been rooms booked in Loudoun so far?
Yes, there have been. I don't have that account right now, but
it might be helpful before board action, which is the first week of December, if we could get that. This committee will make a recommendation to the full board But if there's anything additional you can tell us about what those trends are looking like, that might fill us in a little bit for what's actually happening.
Yeah, I can give you perspective on those trends, yeah.
Okay. Okay, I will entertain a motion. Supervisor Bono.
Yes, I'm going to move that the Economic Development Committee recommend to the Board of Supervisors to direct staff to negotiate a sponsorship agreement with Fairfax 2015 in the amount of $35,000 to promote Loudoun's participation in the 2015 World Police and Fire Games.
Motion is made by Supervisor Bono, seconded by Supervisor Williams. Opening statement. We'll do 3 minutes on the.
Yeah, again, if this were normal times, I'd be behind this 1,000%. The county has put a lot of money into marketing deals. We put $2 million into the Redskins. I do see a lot of benefit coming from that. It's a very long-term deal. The board is very pro-economic development, and I do see that the intangibles in the proposal could potentially help the county in some respects. That said, we have a run on the bank, and somewhere I'm just trying to start holding the line because of the run on the bank that's about to hit us. I know $250,000 isn't going to solve a $100 million problem, but we've got to attack it on every front we can. So, again, I'd like to support the bigger request. I think the original request, if I remember right, was $500, and I think it's now $250. But the fact is that the $35 isn't arbitrary. It's based upon the analysis of the 10,400-some rooms generating the TOT that would be generated off of those. Thank you.
Can I make one last statement, or is that?
We're in debate now. So
okay.
I'll just mention that, in addition to the marketing agreement, we've invested several headcount into the economic development team and hiring additional people that have basically come in. I think up here, you know, we're probably three of maybe the five most aggressive folks trying to really pursue economic development as a fiscal positive for the county and really helping us to pay for the infrastructure we so desperately need here. Again, I'm being a little redundant, but this is something I was certainly supportive of when I saw the item. And then the more information we get, and we'll get even more as the budget numbers crystallize, in addition to some other information that's coming late, I think is making everyone cautious. If that changes between now and the board takes action on December 3rd, it will change my position, and we certainly want to partner in this event. No doubt it's going to be a great event. We want to contribute to it just as much as we possibly can. But we want to try to be responsible, too, because we're going to get a lot of other requests. And the ones that are nice to give to, we need to differentiate between the ones we have to take care of. So I will be supportive of this motion and then look forward to having taken it up on the 3rd.
Well, all right. The 35,000 is based on 4,400 rooms. Not 10,000. So I think if it can be demonstrated that the amount is higher in terms of the actual number of rooms that would be utilized, then I would support a number that was pegged to that, based on the fact that 35,000 is pegged to 4,400, and that is an old estimate that was updated. So I'm not going to vote no this evening. Obviously, this motion is going to pass at this number, but I would say that if there's anything that you can do between now and December 3rd to give us a indication that it's higher than 4,400 and perhaps give the board more confidence in what that number is going to be, then I think I would support at least going up at least to a consistent basis with what that is, what we think it's going to generate in TOT. Okay. All in favor of closing? I'm sorry.
Yeah, just real quick, and yes, thanks for correcting my error. At the 10,441 rooms, the TOT is about $81,000. And if we truly think that that's what it's going to generate, and we have updated data on, I guess this would come December 3rd, then we can amend the number on December 3rd at that time, and I think we all have an open mind to doing that. But I think we need some numbers to generate that. We also have a little bit of a chicken and egg issue here. And that is the fund balance item is coming to the Finance Committee in December, but this is coming to the full board on December 3rd, but that Finance Committee meeting is after December 3rd. I don't remember the exact – do you remember the exact date, Mr. Hemstreet? Top of your head. Okay, but it's after the 10th. It's somewhere down there. One question I might have real quickly for Mr. Hemstreet is, would it be possible to have some kind of tentative fund balance analysis for the December 3rd meeting, or at least some information that can convey to us where we are, or do we need to wait to that Finance Committee meeting?
We can give you some tentative numbers on fund balance prior to the finance committee meeting if that's the pleasure of the board.
Yeah, but it would also need to include some of the demands on it as well. It can't just be, and I see Mr. Mays and.
Yeah, I'm looking towards them
too.
Because
I
think.
I don't want to commit them to something they don't want that would.
I mean, the item will definitely be prepared, or at least will be in draft form by the December 3rd meeting. So we can give you an idea on where we are on the actual fund balance or the preliminary estimate of fund balance. The demands on it are primarily what has already been shared with the board as part of the preliminary fiscal guidance. You know, our recommendation at this point will be that the majority of the fund balance go towards CIP cash and debt service. And so there may be some, miscellaneous things like another item on your agenda today deals with the incentive fund. That would also be a part of it. So whatever goes against that would be a piece that would come out of that fund balance. But the majority of it, my recommendation to the board will likely be towards the CIP and
debt service. Yeah, correct, and that's what we've been talking about the whole way, and that has a big help in offsetting our tax rate and closing that gap, so that's where the concern comes in. But I would be open to a different amount if the TOT numbers are going to justify that different amount. Thank you.
Okay, all in favor of the motion?
Aye.
No one opposed. The motion passes 3-0 with Chairman York and Supervisor Clark absent for the vote. Thank you very much. Next item on our agenda is an update from the Economic Development Advisory Commission, so we can have Ted Lewis and Sharon Wirtz come on up. Or just Ted Lewis. Fine.
Good evening.
Sorry. Can we, staff, get the Economic Development Advisory Commission their own letterhead of some kind? So we're not advertising whoever happens to be the chairman's business at any given moment.
We'll take care of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Good evening, everybody, and thanks for having me. And Sharon does bring her regrets. She unfortunately had to fly up to New Hampshire this morning. I'd like to start with the current ad hoc committees. The first one, the Workforce Committee. We have obtained 165 surveys, which is significantly higher than the previous study that was had. And I think it was definitely due to the work of DED, the Chamber, and EDAC getting the word out to get the surveys completed. So that was very helpful. And we are on schedule to have our findings report in January of 2015. The FDI ad hoc committee, and this report came from Keith Sergerson. They had their first meeting on November 6th. The committee members are, of course, Keith's chair, Sharon Wirtz, Tony Howard, Rick Pearson, Sheila Savar, and then DED support from Buddy and Lois. Their committee, as you know, they're going to be defining the general FDI and global engagement opportunities. They're going to have particular focus on the evaluation of the private sector-led organizations that facilitate the implementation of the regional international business attraction programs. And they're going to be reviewing Loudoun's DED's existing international business engagement and newly developed strategic plan. And the committee plans to meet several, and this was Keith's word, several times before the 19th report. So sounds like they've got a lot of work. Also, nighttime economy. We did have our meeting on June 12th, and as you know, because of the transition with the commission members, with the number that are cycling off, we haven't really formed the total committee yet. We are in the process of forming it, and we're going to, because of the board's early action to approve the slate of nominations, we are going to call on some of the recently approved members to get started working on the committee before they actually officially become commission members. But we do have a lot of work to do on that committee, and it is going to be a challenge, but I think we're going to be able to handle it. It's going to be extremely important to try to work on the education of the group while we're doing our work so that we can meet our deadlines on that committee. The other thing I did want to bring up is, as I had mentioned previously, We did have a discussion at our last EDAC meeting on November 7th of the bylaws and format, the new bylaws and format. And some of the key comments that we got, there were multiple comments on the need for some form of standing committees. There were multiple comments on the need to be able to move more quickly to form ad hoc committees. And I want to emphasize that this was more process-related. Personally and other members indicated that the ad hoc process, actually, we think it works very well. We like the fact that the ED committee and the Board of Supervisors is engaged in what the commission is doing. But I think there are some process things that we can do that will make the formation and getting these ad hoc committees going much quicker. There are also some concerns about being able to keep the commissioners engaged. We had some other comments, but the first three are the ones that we're really going to focus on. And my plan is to discuss these at the executive committee meeting and with DED and, of course, with Tim's group. And then we'll determine if we want to formally make a request on any changes to the bylaws or the process. We do have some work left in 2014. We've got two of our four executive committee members that are cycling off, so we've got to finalize a new executive committee. We've got to get our EDAC agenda for 2015 drafted up, and the ad hoc committees are going to continue their work. One thing I wanted to finish with is that we have had 13 commission members that are going to be cycling off this year, and of those, the ones I listed here have all been two-term members. Some of them longer than two. I think Joe's been on the commission since it started. But we have two former chairmen of committees. We have a former chairman, Joe Petrulli. And so that's a lot of talent that is cycling off the commission. And we're very excited about the new members, the new ideas that are going to come. But there's going to be a learning curve. Probably nobody knows more than you guys sitting up here that it's a very complicated process how the county operates. And I know when I first started on the commission, it took me about a year to understand how the county works and how I could be effective in it. And so it is going to take it's going to be a challenge to get these individuals up because we don't have a year. We want to get going right away. So but I do think, and I also wanted to thank Chairman York and Supervisor Clark for coming, and for Chairman York for participating in the ceremony that we had for the individual cycling off. So with that, I'll take any questions that you guys may have.
Well, at least they aren't going to have to be the county attorney showing up and starting with no lead time whatsoever. Thank you for the update. Thank you, Ted, for your service as chairman. There's still work to be done before the end of your term, too. Yes. But I really do appreciate what you've done as well as the members who are cycling off. Because you're right, we do have an awful lot of talent, a lot of folks who have given a lot of time to the county and to the Board of Supervisors. My one comment is, the bylaw changes are still relatively new. And so I obviously, as we work things out, there will be things that we might identify. But I do think maybe some things could probably be addressed without necessarily having to change the bylaws, just in terms of process. And it's something that Buddy and I have had a little bit of discussion about, so I'm sure we can continue to talk about that. I'm very happy to see that the committee will get a report from the FDI group in January. So thank you for accelerating that and making that happen, so it's a timely discussion for us. Supervisor Williams.
Sure. Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Ted. For our conversation prior to the meeting, I will certainly make more of an effort to get to the EDAC meetings, especially the ones that don't have me double backing and getting into work too terribly late. Tell me, what do you think most of your legacy folks are? Are they busy? Are they losing patience? Do they feel like they're not as effective as maybe they could be? What is your sense? We're losing a lot of, I think, good talent and knowledge, and deciding they don't want to do it anymore. And be frank with me. Do you sense, is there frustration amongst the EDAC committee, at least the legacy folks?
I think that that's a correct assessment. I think that there was a lot of concern early on because of the number of changes and the drastic changes. And I've said it before, I think it had been so long since any changes had been made that when you then make a bunch of them, it's a big impact. I do think, though, that some of the actions of the board as this has played out has tended to show that it's not going to be as drastic a change. And there has been some concerns, but at the same time, I've also heard a lot of comments that the engagement of the Board of Supervisors is much better. And so I think that's, you know, we'll continue to work on them, but I'll take the board be engaged every time, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, I know that that's a balancing act. We don't want to necessarily micromanage. My whole thought, and I've been whining about this for 3 years, was that we wanted to better utilize EDAC and really have you guys working on the issues in parallel with us so we could have another counsel, another advisor to our decisions. I mean, one thing that I'm knee-deep in and our team is with everybody, I know with the chairman as well, and is really kind of looking at the CPM around the metros and the impacts of that and the implications, commercial development, cost of residential. You saw the study that came out about 1.2, 1.6, and so forth. There's a lot of activity. And I do, because I have my kids at a social event, talk to Michelle Frank quite a bit because we both have sports, and she gives me feedback. But honestly, and I'll take ownership for this, I don't feel as engaged kind of on the pulse of EDAC as I should be. And I'll own that because I should be coming to the meetings and getting updates. But somebody sending out minutes after a meeting, somebody talking about, you know, the objectives that are currently being worked on, the activity of the subcommittee, blasting that to the nine of us. I mean, there's only three of us here tonight, and we're getting this brief, and the other six aren't. And I want that information to be a little bit more flowing. And again, that could be a responsibility that we would take. But, again, I remain certainly open-minded and don't hesitate to contact us to let me know how we can better utilize that. And there was also one other discussion I thought about when you were speaking was the flexibility to form ad hoc committees. And I know that's something we kicked around before, but I don't know if it requires an action, Chairman Letourneau, but if you had a subcommittee that wanted to go and pursue, we talked about economic nightlife. We talked about, we just talked about the CPAM. We talked about other things. If there's some path you want to go down and there's interest in that area, I think it makes perfect sense for you to have the authorization to go and form ad hoc committees as needed. But I would hope that those committees would be focused on items that we're focused on in the board. And there's some parallel there. Not that we're kind of going down paths that we're not even that on our radar, if that makes sense, Ted.
My comment to that, I guess, is that the biggest obstacle that I see with our group or identifying issues with committees is the education. And I will say when we had standing committees, I was on transportation infrastructure, so I knew it was my job to be involved with everything transportation infrastructure. It is difficult. There's so many issues in the county. I find it very difficult to keep abreast of all the issues that you guys deal with. And so I'm not certain what the answer to that is other than more communication, maybe Buddy and I communicating a little bit more.
You have to be on, I mean, on that. I understand transportation is an economic development issue, but we're focused on kind of what Buddy's mission is, bring commercial tax base to the board. And I guess I always, sorry, Chairman, but you guys are all over the place. It's almost like you're kind of doing everything. When economic development, and yes, it goes everywhere, but really bringing commercial businesses to the area, to me, that should be the focus. We'll work with transportation on transportation issues. We'll work with TELOC on zoning issues. We want your feedback. But I guess maybe that's where we have gone astray a little bit in getting so far off the mission, which my understanding was helping us bring commercial business to the jurisdiction.
Well, let me jump in just for a sec, because the reason we made these changes was to address that concern. And the ad hoc committee structure changed so that there could be a focused use of resources from the county staff that have to attend all these meetings and for what the board is working on. And so I think what we saw when there was a desire for a nighttime economy ad hoc committee is they were able to come to us, and we gave them that authority, and now they're moving forward on that. The concern with the previous process would be exactly what you said, that there would be many things that would be going on and someone would decide it would be a good idea to go down that path, and they would, and then we would be wondering why they weren't doing what we wanted them to do. So I don't think we can have that both ways, and I think we need to let this play out a little bit. I mean, I'm excited to see what the work product is going to be on foreign direct investment and on nighttime economy, and those will be kind of the first things under the new system to come forward, and let's see how it works. But I understand. I mean, we have a lot of meetings to attend, too, and as much as I would love to come to your meetings, I have a day job, and I do need to be there occasionally, so I know that I can't do that, but I also know that you're an advisory committee to the board, and you're going to give us advice, a structured format for that. And so that's, you know, just like we've got Communications Commission and so on, this is important, but we have a department working on this too. So it's not all on EDAC to, you know, solve all the county's ills. So, I mean, I think the idea is to get a report every other meeting, well, every other month when they're here, because I don't want them to have to spend all their time writing reports, because as they've commented, it's difficult to get folks to do things. The only other thing I wanted to just raise is, you do have, of those 13 members, several of those were term-limited members, right?
Yes. Yeah, their terms were up. The majority were terms were up. There was also, I guess, the terms were up, and then individuals that had ended their first term and didn't apply for the second.
Yeah, there were some of those, but some of them, you were supposed to serve two terms and then cycle off.
That's correct. Everybody listed there was a two-term.
So it's not as if we had a mass exodus of folks who were disgusted and left. It's that their term expired. They couldn't be reappointed, so they're not being reappointed. They just are cycled off. That's the way the process is supposed to work to get folks involved. Supervisor Bono.
Yes, thank you. And you raised the point I wanted to raise. Yeah, we did reduce the size of the EDAC. That's part of it. But the other side is terms had expired. And some of those folks were on the EDC at the time, before I was ever on it, and they just came off just now. So they've cycled through a pretty long tenure, and they've done a lot of great things for us. And don't feel bad, Ted. We have just as hard a time running 100 miles an hour to keep up with all the topics in the county as well. There's a lot goes on here. Our concern, and the reason we went to ad hoc committees instead of standing was, number one, we wanted to make sure the EDAC was in synergy with the board's priorities. But number two, we realized that the board was moving so fast that the EDC was actually lagging behind us. And it was a transportation issue. By the time you came to us on that issue, the board had already many times taken action. And so there was this lag, and it seemed like it was a lot of cycles for really not accomplishing what we needed. So the focus of these committees, in my opinion, is strictly on economic development, foreign direct investment, nighttime economy. Those will spearhead direct economic development in support of Buddy's objectives, and I think that's where we need the committee to be, is in support of the board's objectives, which Buddy is carrying out. And so given that, I think the ad hoc committees are a good way to go, but I noticed one of the things here says there's comments about keeping EDAC members engaged. Well, it's easy to get engaged, join a committee, get on one of these ad hoc committees. At the same time, I do believe that there's many opportunities for the members to be engaged. You can be engaged in the CPAM effort on the metro stations. That doesn't have to be a direct ad hoc committee, but you could say, hey, member so-and-so, how about if you go and deal with that particular issue? You can do that without us forming ad hoc committees. But I do think Supervisor Williams had a very good point, and that is, you know, the five of us up here and three tonight, you know, we've got ideas on how we've wanted to use you, and that's why you have these ad hoc committees. But at the same time, I really believe the EDAC should come to us and say, hey, have you thought of this? Have you thought of that? And be advisory to us and say, hey, we need an ad hoc committee to go look at ABC. And I'm sure that we will be very supportive of it. I realize it takes this committee to authorize that. But the ones you have now were pretty much originated from this committee and the ideas up here. And there's a lot of people, very clever and smart people on the EDAC, that I think can help us as well. If you see a topic, please bring it to us. I think this is very important. So, thank you.
Okay. Yes.
I just want to say, well, first off, nothing I'm going to ever recommend would be to get rid of the ad hoc committees. I like the way they work, and I do think that we do need to figure out a way to educate our members on the issues outside of the commission meeting. So that's the big challenge for us. We'll work on that.
Great. Okay. Well, hopefully we won't have these broad, you know, I feel like we've covered this topic and pretty much every time you're here. So hopefully next time we can just focus on what you're actually reporting to us in 2 months, in January.
And if I may, I don't want lost in this discussion the fact that I believe the last year of EDAC has been very helpful to the department. I believe that the ad hoc committees have engaged quickly and have given us work product and things to work on and advice that has been very effective. So I would compliment you on the way that the commission has worked in the last year from our perspective.
Yeah, I think this is a good story. So, yeah. Okay. Let's move on to our next item. Thanks. Happy holidays, since we won't see. And that is Department of Economic Development office space needs, another topic that's been in front of us for a little while. We'll have Dick Pizzullo come forward, which he is now. What we're going to do, for the benefit of the public, is we will introduce the item, have a higher-level discussion here in open session, and then we will move to a closed session to discuss specific proposals and financial issues. And so I'll turn it over to you, Dick.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Actually, Mr. Hemstreet, let me start with you.
Can I just open just to and then have Mr. Pizzullo take it? This is kind of a follow-up item. It's really something that started, I guess, around the first of the year where we started a discussion with the board, and then it was sent to committee. Maybe we started in committee, and it went to the board and came back. I forget exactly what the sequence was. But part of the discussion is whether – first, we have a space issue within the government center. So we are running out of space in this building, and at some point – we will need to move some areas out into lease space unless we have a facility available for them to move into. So one of the areas that had came up that we could easily take an entire function and move out, which makes sense from a management perspective, is the Department of Economic Development. When we came to the board and to this committee originally to talk about that, the committee asked for a number of options. And so those options we're bringing back here tonight to have the discussion with the board, and they are very much options. A portion of it would be in closed session because there were some there was a competitive process that we were asked to go through, which, you know, we will have that discussion in that forum, primarily because if you decide to go that route, there are some negotiations and some things that need to happen, and public discussion of that would put the board the board's position potentially at risk. Notwithstanding that, there were also a couple of other options that the board asked us to pursue, one of which was to do some construction work within this building to accommodate the space needs for DED, which can be done. However, I need to say that addresses only the current situation. It does not address additional staff needs that we have in the county attorney's office and other operations within the government center. So very quickly, even though that may address one problem, we have other space problems within this building. So, and then there's also a proffer and an opportunity from a developer that is in development presently, which also provides another option for the board to consider. So those are kind of the three options that are here in front of you. We've made a recommendation based off of our own space needs, really, and based off of what we see as an available offer that will expire at some point if the board doesn't take advantage of it. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Pizzullo.
Thank you. As the county administrator said, we were asked to address two off-site options and one option within the building to try to accommodate the immediate needs of the department. We proceeded with the lease process, and we can discuss the details of that further, but you see in your item the approximate cost, five-year cost, of pursuing a Class A lease. We worked with the developers of Loudoun Station, who modified their original offer to incorporate the 5,000 square feet of profit space into an 8,000-square-foot area to accommodate the department. That 5,000 square feet is provided to the county at no lease cost for the first 5 years. That substantially reduced the cost of moving off-site. And then, as you saw, we were able to work with the Commissioner of Revenue to free up some space so that we could accommodate the immediate needs of the department within the building. Be happy to answer any questions.
Supervisor Bonner.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Pizzullo. One thing that would have been handy in this item, and some of the things in this item we'll talk about in closed session, would have been the Comstock proffer. Do you know exactly what that proffer says?
The proffer is attached to the item, but it essentially says that they were providing the lease space at a substantially reduced rate. So the reduced rate...
Oh, wait. Yeah. There's a revised proffer lease proposal attached to the item. Yes. I'm talking about what does Comstock's original proffer say?
Yes, President Bonner, if I can have Mr. Okay. Yard come up to address yes. the proffer. And let me also clarify, there's actually two proffers.
Right. And
so
none of those,
if you can address that as well.
In the item, and I'm trying to sort out what their commitment is exactly. Because based on different conversations, I'm getting a little bit of different information.
Okay, this goes back to the original Comstock approval, which would have been about 2003 timeframe. Prior to the issuance of the first zoning permit for any non-residential development over 150,000 square feet, they are to provide 5,000 square feet of street-level retail space for lease by the county. They will also provide an additional 5,000 square feet of street-level space for lease by the county prior to the first zoning permit for any building in Phase 3. Right now, for a tally of where they're at, they're in Phase 1. They have we've issued approximately 357 permits for multifamily units and about 175,000 square feet of non-residential square footage. So that commitment, we really could go back and say, once we cross that 150,000 square foot threshold, they should have made available 5,000 square feet of retail street level space. I will say that a number of years ago, I did go out on site with the prior economic development director and economic development staff, and we looked around and didn't really trigger any actions to say, let's go after this little street level space that could have been made available by them.
I want to just clarify. I mean, they did reach out to make it available to us once they hit that threshold.
That's
true. It wasn't something that was useful to us at that particular time.
Right. A lot needs to come together for us to be able to make the decision like this process we're in right now. I'll also say that the proffer, Mr. Bona, to get to your original question, it was vanilla shell space. So we would need to fit out for tenant fit out.
5,000 square feet, retail ground level, shell space.
Correct.
Is there a time limit? What is the validity of the proffer?
The proffer is valid right now, and when we could exercise an option to pursue the space, we would take advantage of that current agreement or perhaps amended if necessary.
The item says that a proffer amendment would be required. What is your view? Is that because it's not retail ground level? Is that the reason it would be required?
Primarily, yes.
Okay, because the item says it would be upper story above the movie theater.
That's right. Correct. That's what they're offering.
And that's why you believe there's a proffer amendment.
Yes.
And how long is that process?
Well, you've seen a number of them that the board has initiated about 4 months approximately, maybe six. In this particular case, I think some additional discussion might be necessary for time frame and board initiation of such a thing.
Okay, thank you.
Because, Charles, the second proffer also factors in to this particular offer, right? Which we can discuss, but the second, can you explain the second proffer, which is related to Phase 3, I believe?
Yeah, there's an additional offer for additional 5,000 square feet at Phase 3.
Of office?
Phase 3 is a combination of residential and non-residential square footage. I can tell you what those numbers are.
No, but there's a proffer to the county associated with Phase 3.
Correct.
And what is that? What Supervisor Bono is trying to get at is exactly what is that Phase 3 proffer?
The Phase 3 for the additional space is additional 5,000 square feet.
Of what?
Of space, of additional street level space.
Street level space.
Correct.
Okay. I didn't, I, I was confused on that point. I'm not. Do you have anything to add, Mr. Mazzullo?
No, that's accurate.
So there was 5,000 square feet of street level space as part of phase one, which is essentially already available. And then there is future additional 5,000 square feet of street level space that has not become available yet.
Correct.
Okay. And those are the two proffers provided to the county as it relates to office space with Loudoun Station.
Correct.
Okay. Additional, yes.
No, that essentially sums up the thrust of the item for the evening.
Okay. Do you want to hold on financial questions until after? Why don't we do that? I am ready.
Pursuant to Section 2.23711 of the Code of Virginia, I move that the Loudoun County Board of Supervisors Economic Development Committee recess this public meeting and enter into closed session. The authority for this closed session is Section 2.23711A, subsection 3. The purpose of the closed session is discussion or consideration of the acquisition of real property for a public purpose where discussion in an open meeting would adversely affect the bargaining position or negotiating strategy of the board. The subject of the closed session is the acquisition of office space for the Department of Economic Development.
Motion is made, seconded by Supervisor Bona. Any statements? All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye. Everybody in support, Supervisor Clark, Chairman York, absent for the vote. We're going to go to the Lovettsville room due to the number of staff involved in this discussion.
I move that the closed session be adjourned, that the Board of Supervisors Economic Development Committee reconvene its public meeting, and that the minutes of this public meeting should reflect that no formal action was taken in closed session.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor of the motion? Aye.
Aye.
Nobody opposed? Same, two absent.
I move that the resolution certifying the closed session be adopted and reflected in the minutes of this public meeting.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Same to absent. Board members, we're going to go into a five-minute recess. When we return, we'll go into the Loudoun 2020 overview update. We have Buddy Reiser, who wanted to brief us on what is being called Loudoun 2020, which is our long-term economic development strategy. Buddy.
Thank you. I'd start by saying that today we find ourselves in an enviable position. The state of our economy is strong. Loudoun County is a great environment in which to do business. We're supported by a very stable tax environment with a corporate income tax of 6% that has remained steady since 1972, and we have one of the lowest combined state and local use taxes. We have a high-quality workforce, access to the world with Dulles International Airport, and the densest fiber anywhere. And with our central mid-Atlantic region, we provide access to a customer base that represents 60% of the U.S. population. We're a highly educated community. Here's a cool stat. There is a community college within 30 miles of every resident of Virginia, and we're very fortunate to have a very good program here in Loudoun. And we have some great university assets in place, George Washington University Science Technology Campus, GMU, Strayer, Patrick Henry, Shenandoah, other programs. But as Loudoun continues to evolve, hopefully those offerings will evolve as well. The board has placed a high priority on economic development and business-friendly best practices, and the results are beginning to show. In fiscal 14, 39 companies invested almost $250 million to move in or to expand in Loudoun. And FY14 saw growth across many clusters. We recently landed two huge office deals, one filling vacant space and one that triggered new development of a new office building. And our rural economy also plays a critical role in ensuring balanced tax base and diverse business community. We have a clear picture of what the rural economy will look like in 2020 thanks to the board's rural economy business development strategy. The rural business development team has taken an enhanced proactive business development approach, and we're driving the rural economy right now. As an effort, as an example, we cite the ongoing discussions around the farm breweries and the establishment of Loudoun as a place to locate a farm brewery. You'll hear more on that in your next item. Even with these successes, we know that we'll need to continue to grow and diversify our tax base. Now, looking ahead, there will be challenges. Over the last 20 years of incredible growth, residential has been a huge component of our economy. But for all intents and purposes, the county's inventory of residential single-family units will be depleted in the early 2020s. This depletion will put pressure to convert existing commercial land to support additional residential, and it's imperative that the county maintains an available supply of land for commercial uses that are important to Loudoun's future. Also, there's legitimate concern that Virginia's economy is more dependent on the public sector than is healthy. 35% of all Virginia jobs are reliant on the public sector. And although Loudoun has a diverse economy, 15% of all Loudoun jobs are dependent on this sector. The Commonwealth lost 293,000 jobs during the last recession. It's possible that we could lose another 22,000 jobs next year. And the region continues to see a soft office market in the near term. The D.C. region has seen vacancy rates as high as 30% in some corridors. There are more than a dozen empty buildings in Western Fairfax that impacts our market. While we have seen a number of office deals recently in Loudoun, there's still some softness in key office corridors like Route 7 and Route 50. The cluster strategy has begun to make an impact on multiple clusters, but it's important for Loudoun County to continue focusing on building a diversified economy and growing beyond one or two successful clusters. We're very proud of our data center cluster. Its growth has been amazing, but today and tomorrow, we need to be more than data centers. We've aggressively placed our flag in the ground for the future of Loudoun in the areas of cybersecurity, big data, and personalized medicine. There's no reason that Loudoun County shouldn't be a big player in each of these sectors. We're committed to these clusters and will be strategically working to attract companies from those sectors. And that doesn't in any way keep us from going after things like advanced manufacturing, modeling and simulation, aviation, and aerospace. Amid these challenges, there are opportunities. Perhaps the biggest is that in a few short years, we will be further connected to the rest of the region with Metro Rail. The millions of square feet of office and retail planned within the transit-oriented developments around 606 and 772 and within our other mixed-use centers provides a tremendous opportunity to sell a vision for Loudoun County. The county is also investing over $500 million of local money into the road infrastructure, as you know. Rarely does a community have the kind of opportunities that we have right now. But right now is the time for us to have the discussion on how we get to the point where our tax base is less reliant on residential taxes. DED is scoping out a campaign that we've called Loudoun 2020 to develop strategies to respond to our challenges and leverage our opportunities for economic development over the next 5 years. In your item, we have listed 14 of what we consider to be the most important questions that we need to address in the areas of economy, planning, and marketing during the development of the campaign. And we think that in order to effectively advise the board, we need to gather the data necessary to have a full context on all of these issues. The Loudoun 2020 initiative will be a key tool in that process. And we'll be happy to take any questions you have on our plan.
Okay. So where are we going with this? Are those questions for us? Are those questions we have to answer as a community? Are those questions that the department's going to answer?
We believe that a full strategic planning exercise is needed to really address the questions that we're asking there. I think that every one of those questions is very involved and will need to be considered deeply before we can really advise the board on the future in those areas.
Well, 2020 is only 6 years away. And knowing how long a strategic plan process takes, this could be a Loudoun 2025 discussion by the time we're really moving on it. So exactly how do you see that happening?
We actually see this as a two-year program. We've actually been scoping it for the last year, and we've made a good dent in what we need to do. I think that the next step is going to be more of a community-oriented input session. Some research is going to be needed, some deep dives into some of the numbers, and in order for us to really identify the work plan going forward and into the next decade, which we think is going to be a transformational decade for the county, we need to get started on this program right away.
And what resources do you need to do that?
We've been discussing that with county administration, and we think that we'll be addressing that in the upcoming budget. I don't think that most of the research is going to be available to us with our current staffing levels, but there, I think there are other options that are out there that we've been discussing with county administration.
Okay. Supervisor Bono.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate these questions, buddy, and these are the same questions everybody on this board has been asking since we were campaigning. But I'm going to be candid. I read this item, and I said, I don't know what this thing is. I don't know what this program is. It's got a great name. 2025 might be a more appropriate. But there's nothing in here that tells me here's what we're trying to accomplish. I mean, making statements about increasing the commercial tax base, I mean, we all know that. We say it over and over again. But there's nothing specific in here, but you hang us at the end saying DED believes additional resources will be needed, funding will include in the FY16 proposed budget for this project. I know you probably heard my little speech earlier tonight. Not a good time. Mm-hmm. Not a good time. And my personal view, and I don't know where the rest of the board is if we're going to take on an initiative like this, we've given your office a substantial number of additional resources since we've come into office. We're looking at possibly moving you because you can't fit with all these resources anymore. And I really think you've got to be very careful about coming in and asking for another budget enhancement to take on something like this. It's short on specifics. Long gone the obvious, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but I can't tell, and maybe it needs a work plan, and maybe it needs some objectives carved out, but I really can't tell what this initiative is at all by reading the four-page item, and yet you're saying I'm going to request FY16 money for this, so we're going to have to know a lot more before we can talk about additional money, so thank you.
Okay, we have a work plan that's been roughed out and discussed with county administration, but we didn't provide it tonight, but we can definitely do that.
And you didn't actually say additional money. You did say budget elements, but that could include
will be included in FY16 proposed
budget. Yeah,
for this project.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying I'm trying to find a discussion point here. I mean, I think perhaps that could mean allocating resources a little bit differently in order to accommodate this versus something else. I'm just saying that's another option.
Mr. Chairman, I think what we're talking about is we believe we would need some consultant support to do this, so it wouldn't be additional staff. But in order to engage the public and engage the clusters and look at our cluster strategy, as well as look at what does Loudoun County look like in the next decade. We believe we would need some consulting support to do that.
Okay. Other questions from board members? All right. Well, we'll hear more about this, I'm sure. And I'm sure you'll also be willing to discuss it offline with board members as we move forward.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay. It is with great trepidation the REDC will come up. No, just kidding. Let's get our business development strategy implementation update from the Rural Economic Development Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and staff. I'm Destry Jarvis. I chair the Rural Economic Development Council. As you all know, we completed the Rural Economic Business Strategy some time ago, and you approved it. We are going to report to you periodically as we have opportunity to come before the committee on different pieces of the specific proposals and recommendations contained in that strategy. Tonight, we've chosen a couple to begin this process with, and hope that we have additional opportunities to amplify our work and progress and our recommendations to you for subsequent action. My particular sector on the council is outdoor recreation. That is my profession for the last 45 years. And I would say to you that your prior recognition of the significance of the Potomac Heritage National Scenic Trail is like the anchor store of a mall. It is the initiative, it is the program that will attract visitation to this county from outside. And completing it as a continuous trail through the county is the top priority of the Loudoun County Trails Association, which we have formed this year, comprised of board members representing equestrian, trail runner, hiker, mountain biker, and commuter biker organizations. We have some real good opportunities, I believe, to foster Potomac Heritage Trail, one of which is Supervisor Higgins has requested that the county attorney's office confirm some research that we have done in county records that there are, in fact, three rights of way across Short Hill Mountain that were never extinguished or relinquished or abandoned. One of those, George's Mill right-of-way, an old road around the face of Short Hill Mountain on the Potomac River, would be the connector piece for the Potomac Heritage Trail that will connect it on public property to the CNO Canal towpath, to Harper's Ferry, to the Appalachian Trail, and is a critical piece. If the county can confirm that our research is correct, we believe that a trail through that property can be put in by volunteers at no cost to the county once the right-of-way is assured. It will connect to the face of Short Hill Mountain and trails that exist on Short Hill owned by the National Park Service, but which at present are inaccessible to the public because there is no public access to that area. At some point in the near future, trail bridges will be needed to create a continuous corridor that would take two bridges to create a continuous trail from Leesburg to Great Falls. And we think that should be a high priority. The proposed state park in Nearsville Valley that is moving along quite well will provide 1,300 acres of state-owned land once it is purchased and donated. That will provide trail connections as well, many miles of trail connections that will be multimodal. We think this is going to be a huge attraction to Loudoun County, and we are working with county staff to develop a comprehensive trail map that will show both amenities and connections as well as trail corridors themselves.
Let me just stop you because we're working off a chart that gives us sort of a sector by sector update. Mm-hmm. So where are we?
This is the trails initiative. That was one of the.
So this is in the encourage the formation of a county multi-user trails association.
Correct.
Okay. This is part of that?
Yes.
Effort. Okay.
Yes. We have formed the association. It's fully representative of the cross-section of organizations based in the county that represent different types of trail users.
Okay.
And in order to have a comprehensive trail system, we need trails.
Right.
We have the rudiments of those. The county has corridors in various stream valleys that can be turned into trails. We will connect those with the existing WNOD trail, with the Appalachian Trail, with this Potomac Heritage National Scenic Trail, which is a unit of the National Park System, and lead to making Loudoun County a mecca for outdoor recreation enthusiasts. We'll connect wineries and breweries and other amenities with trails, and this will become the best place in the state of Virginia for trail enthusiasts.
Okay.
And I will stop at that point. We are also, I would say one more thing, we are also talking about a couple of other trails that will cross private nonprofit properties and other public lands that would not acquire any land acquisition, and also the possibility of trails down the road and the reservoir properties at Beaver Dam and Percival Reservoir. Watershed reservoirs across the country are open to trail use, and we think that's very appropriate here in Loudoun County as well. I will stop at that point and pass it on to Doug.
Okay.
Bobby.
Mr. Fabioli, welcome.
Good to be here. Supervisor Letourneau, the subject item that I'll speak on is the peer-to-peer.
So let me just back up. So are we going to do each one of these? Okay, Kelly.
No, we're just doing two tonight.
The idea is that you'll get the chart updated for every one of the nine recommendations every time we come, but that we'll pick out two different recommendations that we've made significant headway on to give you a little bit more detail.
I see. That makes perfect sense. We just missed that introductory piece, so I was a little bit lost. Okay.
So I'm on the peer-to-peer effort, and that really encompasses the education. Now, when the original strategy was put together, we had an asset that was underutilized. I'm going to get into that asset in a minute, but before I do that, I do want to mention just a little bit about the Viticulture and Enology Education Center that has been a partnership effort to get a feasibility study done by Percival and Loudoun County, and that currently has a proposed business plan. Is that the best way to say it? Okay. So they're working through this effort. I've been in on the meetings on this. We have, I think, overall, we have the assets here of the knowledge, and now we're trying to look at how that structure would work, and we'll see how that comes. Next time we see you, we may have a touch on that, or you may hear about it. But what I really wanted to talk about was the peer-to-peer. We have a nonprofit organization that started up as well. It's called Piedmont Epicurean and Agricultural Center. It started out as a regular for-profit business. We've evolved it into a nonprofit because it seemed to make more sense for funding and for some grant opportunities. But what I really want to touch on is something that came up. Jim Hillary to my left is our what are you?
Extension.
That's right. That's what you are. Anyway, by him stepping in, he has really picked up and pushed forward a lot of the gaps that were there when the strategy had started. So myself, I've stepped into a mentor program, and I'm mentoring, and I encouraged a couple of my staff members to become the mentees so that we've got this education program started. It's a model. It's something that's going to work. But I'm going to hand the ball off at this point to Jim and let him keep going and tell him about what we're doing.
Good evening. I'm Jim Hillary, and I am your extension agent. So I represent Virginia Tech and Virginia State University, as well as Virginia Cooperative Extension. And in that capacity, my role in supporting this effort has to bring the education resources and information available to the universities here to Loudoun County. And we've done that as it relates to peer-to-peer. What we've done is, in cooperation with Virginia Tech, have implemented the Northern Piedmont Mentor Farmer Program, which is a local implementation of Virginia Tech's Virginia Beginning Farmer and Mentor Program. And so it allows us to go ahead and look and see what the local needs are and apply that program and its curriculum to those local needs. Part of developing a peer-to-peer or a mentor-farmer program is to, there's a requirement to develop both the mentors and the mentees. So there's been a need for some preliminary programs to support, and one of those is unique to Loudoun County, and that's the introduction to whole farm planning, which uses a Virginia Tech curriculum. However, we apply it online, and we open that up to the community. We have about 32 people who are enrolled in that right now. But we also work with Fauquier County and their Virginia Cooperative Extension, or their VCE office, to bring the Northern Piedmont Beginning Farmer Program here to Loudoun County. And we use the Mayor Center in Middleburg as a common ground. So collectively, what we're able to do is to develop beginning farmers so that they can be credible as mentees when we introduce them to mentors, and that's important, so that the mentors have a sense that we're not bringing people who have no clue what they're going to do when they arrive on the property of the mentor and to help out. So those are three programs that are ongoing, part and parcel of peer-to-peer, and they're done under the umbrella of peer-to-peer.
You want to talk about the Ag Summit?
I can do that.
I'd love you to.
Very good. Thank you. In addition to that, one of the findings of the strategy was that there was no single clearinghouse for agriculture or horticulture education here in Loudoun County. So Extension has addressed that, and we've actually pulled together several of the offices and agencies that provide education programs, both formal and informal, meaning schools but also nonprofits, together to form what's called the Agriculture Education Summit. And so that's a collective group. It reflects Northern Virginia Community College and, of course, Extension, as well as the NGOs. One example would be Morven Park. A second would be Temple Hall. But at this point, after convening the summit and having about 19 different offices and agencies present what they offer in the way of education for agriculture and horticulture and natural resources, we captured that in a document, and we're prepared to transfer that online to develop a learning map so that an individual, whether that happens to be a parent who's looking at learning a learning path for their child, or it's an adult in a second career, would be able to come to that website, look to see what their goals are, where they want to be, as those relate to learning with agriculture or horticulture, and tie into that learning map. And it will lay out the organizations that are available to the residents in Loudoun County so they can do a sequential walkthrough from where they need to be. An example might be as a parent. If you have just a little person, a 5-9-year-old, you would enroll them in the 4-H program. And so they would be a clover bud. And as they mature, they can stay in 4-H until they're 18. But ideally, they may consider rolling over into FFA at CS Monroe Technology Center when they're old enough, and continue with that agriculture education, and then take that to Northern Virginia Community College, where they do have a horticulture program, and onwards from there to Virginia Tech or Virginia State. But the idea is to bring together each of these organizations to try and align their programs. It's not an attempt to influence their curriculum, but rather to help the residents find linkage between each of these, so it's not so much of a wonder to figure out how they can find programs to support their goals. The same thing could be done for a second career adult. They retire from their first career and they're trying to figure out how they become a beginning farmer. Well, this website would help them in identifying extension services as well as Northern Virginia Community College and different programs that are available for them. So that's in the process now.
As we've identified the need for education, it's really important that we see the people that are available, the assets, the education that they're going to need. We got businesses going on. We need workforce. We also want the leaders of those businesses. We want them to know what they're getting into. We're asking people to invest in the land, and they got to know the business model. So all these different pieces and levels of education, we have them. But I think Jim's done a great job of starting to put these pieces together and make sure that, you know, as we're moving forward, we get tighter and tighter on this operation and keep being more efficient and building better businesses.
Can I just add to that, as far as taking the next step from teaching new farmers and beginning farmers to placing them on land to be able to farm and build businesses? 2 weeks ago, the Department of Economic Development partnered with Future Harvest to do a land linking workshop, sort of a, you know, tongue-in-cheek, call it a match.com for people who want land and people who have land that want it to be put into production. The goal for that workshop was to have 25 people, and we had over 50 people, not counting staff and speakers. So that was a huge success. So we know we can teach them everything they need to know, but if they don't have land to farm, you know, it's all for naught. So just taking that next step to actually economic development being the catalyst to actually build businesses on rural lands.
Cool. Okay. Anything else from the committee? Any questions?
Open for questions.
I guess not.
Okay.
All right.
We'll keep growing.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
If I may. Ms. Fabioli, I just want to publicly congratulate you.
About to do that. Yes, go.
For your awards at the Loudoun Chamber Small Business Awards here a week ago Friday.
It was my pleasure to receive, and, you know, it doesn't happen in a great land. You know, it's a great land, and I'm really pleased to be here and, you know, just keep growing together.
It was well deserved.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is an update from Visit Loudoun. So we'll call Beth Erickson.
Good evening. Buddy is handing out packets of information that I've put together for you in briefing packets, which will include a copy of my presentation. Okay, it's my pleasure tonight to cover a few key items, and I'm going to go ahead and try to keep us on time, so I have a timer that I'm going to have on there, and I have no idea what's going to happen once it goes off, I'll be honest with you, but let's see. So I'm going to cover four key topics with you this evening. I'm going to give you a snapshot of where we are in terms of lodging and how things are looking in our industry. I'm going to go over Epicurious Virginia results, talk to you a little bit about a top line results that came out of a craft brewery study, and then I've left some time in the end for us to discuss the GSA per diem. The news is very, very good, and I know that I had the opportunity to brief you a few months ago that started to show you the trends coming above and beyond. I think we are in the midst of, I'm cautiously optimistic, midst of a rebound and a recovery in our industry. We have occupancy is rising, ADR, average daily rate that our hotel properties are charging, and the very important RevPAR, which is revenue per room, is continuing to grow. But I think what's important is to see how we are stacking up both regionally, the Washington, D.C. region, and nationally. So the information that I have on the next presentation came together, and one of the things that I want to point out, too, that I want to point out, which when we look at ADR, D.C. projections, we are well ahead of what's happening in the D.C. metropolitan area, which includes Fairfax, Arlington, Alexandria. But we are also ahead of where we are nationally. And again, I think part of this, as we've talked about it in the past, we are a little slower on the recovery. And so I'm very pleased to see this and pleased to see the continued growth. And I think one of the numbers that I enjoy most that you're seeing ahead of you right now is the revenue per room. When we're seeing year to date almost a 13% increase over the year previously. So we are in good shape, and I'm very, very pleased and very proud to share that information with you. And one item could be the fact of Epicurious Virginia and the support of this board, and in particular economic development. So I just want to go through and talk to you with some great numbers. We had a 75% increase over last year. We had about 2,000 people engaged in Epicureans. These are the most compelling numbers moving forward. We increased our overnight trips up to 31%, almost 32% of those 2,000 attendees stayed overnight. And I'm going to break those numbers down to you in just a few moments. The average travel per spending is a very strong, almost $670,000. The next item, the 75% were new visitors to this event. I'm going to talk to you about how we reached them in just a few moments. But the last bullet, 55% visited other attractions in Loudoun County, is a marked change over the year previously. Again, we're building on a very strong foundation. But personally, what I love to see was driving and seeing people that I know were at Epicureans standing out front, reading the menus to go into restaurants in Leesburg. The chart ahead of you shows 2013 in blue, 2014 in red. The number that I want to point out to you, which I think is key, is the visitor to Loudoun County, 37%, which is an increase over last year, and the resident of Loudoun County decreasing a little bit. And that's what we're looking for, is that trend again, to have that good, strong focus of local but building upon it. So I think that that's a very important and strong, healthy indicator. This is where our residents came from, our visitors to Epicureans, and this is where they're engaged. And you're going to see this chart again in just a moment with an overlay of where we attracted and where we put all of our marketing efforts to show that we had a great benefit. I love the group from Pittsburgh. I actually had the opportunity to talk to them to find out how they heard about this event, and one of the ways that they found about it was one of our national partners. So it was tremendous. Looking at, if you look over on the right-hand side, that overnight trip indicator, again, 31.6, almost 32% stayed overnight. And again, that is 32% of the 2,000. Strong, we're seeing the trends moving forward. I'm going to take you through the next slides very quickly to show you on a visual tour of what happened at Epicureans. It was very exciting and very engaging, as I'm sure you can see. The woman on the upper right is Natalie Dupree, who is of great significance, and she was wonderfully engaged and was a tremendous asset to the event. The Sterling Restaurant Supply, our chef's demonstration tent, focused Natalie Dupree, in addition to other chefs. And you can see, again, in the upper right-hand corner, in standing room only crowd. So it was tremendous. Virginia Wine Education Tent, Virginia Tourism Corporation, and the Virginia Wine Marketing Office are key partners in this event. And this is a tremendous, tremendous asset. And this is what sets this event apart from others. VIP experience was very robust, tremendous. The arrow stream that you see, what came from a vineyard, Early Mountain, and I went in and met a group of four folks who were there from Minnesota. So it's tremendous. Loudoun wine blending, and Doug Fabioli has stepped out, but I want to talk to you just a moment about this. This was a new introduction into the event. We wanted to make sure that our Loudoun wineries were showcased. And so this was a series of speed blendings that occurred, and it was a tremendously successful initiative. We had our top three. The woman who won actually was from Indianapolis. The second was from Charleston, and the third winner was from Loudoun County. Again, I love to hear that, as I know you do as well. We introduced this year a butchering demonstration with Spring Hill Poultry, again, looking at the rural economic development, one of our local agricultural partners. And it was a poorly named, because we called it a live butchering demonstration. The hog was not live, but the person butchering it was, and he is a French-trained chef. I had the opportunity to walk up, and I was really, really pleased to see in some places it was 7 to 10 people deep. People were engaged. They wanted to understand where their food came from. This was tremendous. Our opening night event that took place at the Marshall House was a lovely engagement of our partners. One of the things that I know that we had a great opportunity to build upon last year was our partnering events. Let me tell you that Northgate, which is the Spanish dinner, sold out. Magnolia's event sold out. That was a whiskey pairing dinner. Salamander's Brunch sold out. Goodstone's event sold out. Oatlands, which was the 1940s event, showed increase over the year previously. And Green Hill, which is the one in the front, was a new event. So they were out, they were engaged, and it was strong. I told you I was going to show you this just a moment ago, and this is these little circles that are drawn over is where we had our dedicated media outreach, which we were able to leverage our dollars. We invested about $100,000 into that media buy 2-to-1 and reached over 9 million impressions, and it was tremendous. The folks from Pittsburgh actually saw the event through Sever, which is one of our key marketing partners. I'm going to continue to go through these quickly because I want to show you the arrow in your upper right, which is very important. Our PR and media coverage, if you did not know this event was going on, I'm not sure how, because we had tremendous support from Fox News calling it one of the top events of the late summer. We had fantastic news coverage from Channel 7, Channel 5. This was over $2 million in earned media that talked about Loudoun County, that talked about the wineries here and the food and culinary focus. Here's Doug Fabioli in your lower right-hand corner. Again, it was absolutely tremendous. Washingtonian, Washington Post. It was really very, very successful, and I want to go on record to thank this board in your continued support. I look forward to coming in and hopefully early next year to brief you on what we have in store for 2015. My next great pleasure is to talk to you a little bit about the other side of the equation, where we talk about the wine connoisseur and those who are being drawn in because of our wine product. Our craft brewing product is extremely strong. These are the results of a survey that we worked on with Virginia Tourism Corporation, and this is a Commonwealth-wide survey, and this is the first of its kind. We're actually presenting it tomorrow at VA1, which is Virginia's tourism conference that's taking place in Reston. What's important here and why I pulled these out, you have a press release in your packet that will give you more detailed information. But what we're finding is that the profile is a very well-educated male is your dominant, about 75%, with jobs in the technology sector, education, and healthcare fields. These are key job indicators for economic development and where we're looking for continued growth. 75% stating that they visit 2 to 3 breweries per visit. 48% of the responders visit 5 or more breweries per year. So they're going out and taking trips 5 or more times per year. When they're coming, they're staying overnight, anywhere from 2 to 4 nights. So they are a great attractor for us and for this region. The statement of talking about looking at opportunities to connect it, and I love that we just talked about outdoor recreation, that when they're here, they want to engage in the region. They want to connect their trips to perhaps wineries, but they also want to be engaged in outdoor recreation opportunities and festivals. Overnight visitors tour multiple breweries. That's not a surprise. It's a tremendous opportunity. And when they're here, they leave a lot of money behind. So they're a great, great visitor profile. And I will tell you that I will skew it because I'm one of the women who absolutely loves craft brews. So I'm looking forward, and I enjoy as we continue to move forward on that. The last item that I want to talk to you about, and then we'll open it up for questions if you have any, is the continued discussion on the Government Services Administration's per diem rate. Look at that. I have now hit my 10 minutes, and I'm on my last slide. That's a good thing.
Cut your mic yet.
Oh, thank you. Let me just tell you, I know that I've provided to you updates, and I have a situation analysis in your packet as well, that on August 15th, the GSA reduced our per diem rate, which is what government travel will be charged to stay on our properties, from 105 to 96. Beyond any shadow of a doubt, that is an extremely difficult drop, and it is impacting our hotel properties in a tremendously negative fashion. The rate went into effect October 1st. So what are we doing about it in terms of Visit Loudoun? What is our role? And Visit Loudoun's role in this discussion is one of facilitation. It's one of pulling information together, and it's one on making recommendations. I am very pleased to tell you, and I know that Supervisor Letourneau has been a key part in this. He joined us at a GSA meeting on September 19th where we brought our hotel partners down to understand the methodology of how the GSA arrives at their rate. There's a copy of their presentation in your notebook that I've provided for you, which should hopefully answer any questions that you might have, and I'm happy to answer any questions as we discuss this. The goal at this point is we are trying to see if we can have it reviewed and opened for review. Our window to do that is will close by December 31st. In order to have the rate reviewed, we have to have a federal travel manager state that they cannot book business in Loudoun County at that rate. That is where we are working currently from a Visit Loudoun perspective, and this is something that is on our radar every single day, and we're moving forward on it. So with that, I am happy to answer any questions, and I really thank you for your time.
Thanks. Thank you very much for the update. It was very good and comprehensive and efficient. I don't know that we need to spend too much time on the GSA issue. It is fast-moving. I had some conversations even today. There's some different strategies. There's two issues. There's the actual per diem rate that was changed, and then there's the fact that Loudoun County is not part of the metropolitan Washington area. And I think it's safe to say that Visit Loudoun and county administration and myself and others are working to try to have both those issues dealt with in a variety of ways. And so we have an uphill battle, but we'll see where it goes. Other questions on the presentation? No? Well, we look forward to, yes.
I have one last thing, which is I'd like to present a token of our appreciation as being truly our founding sponsor on this event. I have a lovely plate that I would like to present to you.
Auditor, can you lift it up? There we
go. Like to bring it over to you, if I may. Which, of course, and the plate is from Fortessa.
Oh, it has to be. Yes. Yes. Why not? Okay, so now we're in the well. Beth, go ahead if you want to explain to us what it is.
Well, we are very proud to present in great appreciation to the Loudoun County Board of Supervisors and Economic Development a small token of our appreciation at Visit Loudoun to thank you for your support of Epicurus, Virginia, and your continued support on ensuring that Loudoun County is positioned to be the culinary destination that it is growing to be. So thank you so very much.
We have a little bit of everything going on tonight. Okay, the next item is proposed amendments to the Business Incentive Fund. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Hemstreet to introduce this item.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is our, I guess, second year or first full year of having a Business Incentive Fund. And so what was directed by the board previously was to bring back a discussion of the incentive fund and any amount in the incentive fund to the Finance and Government Services and Operations Committee for a recommendation. However, given the fact that the incentive fund deals with economic development incentives, we also felt it was appropriate to bring it to the ED committee prior to going to the Finance Committee in terms of when we present our fund balance item and our recommendations. I need to apologize to the committee. I miscommunicated with staff with regard to the motion. There's actually two parts of the motion, one dealing with the current status of the Government Opportunities Fund and what's happening with that at the General Assembly level. And Mr. Reiser, I'll turn it over to him to discuss specifically what's happening there. So what we've included in the packet is a motion that talks about or considers the possibility that the Government Opportunities Fund, Governor's Opportunities Fund, is not funded by the General Assembly. The challenge for us at that point is that our incentive program is based off of a Government Opportunities Fund grant. So if that doesn't exist because it's not funded by the General Assembly, the recommendation goes into separating those for certain purposes if that should happen. Another thing the board could consider, or the committee could consider recommending to the board, is asking the General Assembly to fund the Governor's Opportunity Fund so that we would then be able to continue our business incentives. The second piece of it is really me looking for direction from the board as to whether or not you want me to include any type of increase in the fund balance item for the Economic Incentive Fund. So this really should be read as direction to me and not direction to the Finance and Government Services and Operations Committee. So the second piece of that motion, if you would like to consider increasing the Business Incentive Fund, would be moving that the Economic Development Committee recommend to the board to direct the county administrator to increase the cash allocation for the Business Incentive Fund when I bring it to the Finance Committee and then to the board in January. So I apologize for that mistake in the motion. There's a couple of issues with the Economic Incentive Fund. One is that in closed session, the board has discussed some prospective incentives, so we definitely need to set aside sufficient funds for those should they come forward. I can either reserve that in fund balance and then keep the incentive fund separate from that going into FY16, and then the question would be whether or not to leave it at $500,000 or if the board would like to increase that to $1 million. So the numbers there are a little bit confusing because you have some that are potentially obligated and then you have an amount that's available. So I'm not sure if I cleared that up at all, but that's kind of what's on the table for this item, and that's where I want to open it. And then Mr. Reiser can go into further detail with respect to GOF and the General Assembly, if you like.
I think I spell it out pretty well in the item. The Governor's Opportunity Fund is something that's being discussed at the state level because of the problems that they're having with the budget. The fund has a bank balance of about $7 million now, with commitments or at least offers to pay about $26 million, including the $950,000 for Loudoun projects. Also, the General Assembly has cut back in its allocation to the fund almost $24 million in 2011 and $11.8 million every year since. So the fund has, while been a very good closing tool for the state, budget constraints have made it a little bit more tough on the General Assembly to allocate that money going forward.
Okay. I think we have a lot of different issues here. Another issue, which is kind of ancillary, I think, is, and I've discussed it before, but tonight I'm going to make it part of a motion. We qualify projects differently than the Commonwealth does as part of the Governor's Opportunity Fund. They're looking at different criteria than we are. For instance, income from jobs is a criteria for the state. We don't get any of that tax revenue. We only get property tax revenue and other services and sales tax and so on. So there are occasions when a particular project scores differently for us versus the state. And I have long wished that VDEP would amend its criteria, and whether that's administratively or through General Assembly action, and I've never really gotten to the bottom of whether General Assembly action is actually needed or whether it's more of an administrative decision to give localities more flexibility in how we score projects, because we have left some incentive opportunities on the table because of the differences. So if we're going to take up all of these issues, I think that's another one that we ought to take up. And when the time comes, I would add that to the list of things that we're directing. Supervisor Williams.
Sure. Just a quick clarification. I mean, we've been able to take advantage. First of all, this legislation hasn't even changed yet. So in terms of your timing, it's being discussed as part of the budget process. Why do you need direction from us on whether we are going to double our funds? I mean, fund balance?
Yeah.
I can answer that, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hampshire.
When the board set up the economic incentive fund, the direction was to keep it out of the budget process and then fund the incentive fund through fund balance. And so the issues, and let me say what I said a little differently, maybe let's clarify it. The board has potential deals out there that are in excess of the fund at the moment. So the first thing I've got to do is at least increase the amount of the fund to be potentially equal to.
We've got to cover what we committed to cover.
The second question is, do you want to recommend that the fund continue with $500,000 in it, or do you want to increase that amount to $1 million?
Haven't we been, if the chairman's indulged me, I do have a follow-up question. We've been able to match the governor's opportunity fund on quite a few occasions with transportation improvements and alternative incentives aside from just our cash balance. So I think that at least is the model I would be inclined to follow and see what we could, assuming that it doesn't go away, try to meet our match with other alternatives aside from cash balance. So I'm not inclined at this time to increase the level, although we still need to cover the commitments we've put out there. So I'll certainly honor what we committed to, but I'm a little short of doubling up what we put out last year.
Well, let me ask a question then. Sure. We have potential commitments that exceed our balance. Mm-hmm. So in order to fund those commitments, would we not have to adjust this amount?
This is for next year. Those commitments.
Mr. Hampshire, let me. Sorry.
Okay. Right now, you haven't closed any deals?
Right.
Okay. So there's nothing taken out of the fund. If these deals are closed, it will wipe out the fund, and then it will go into fund balance a little deeper. Okay. So the question that I'm asking for guidance on is, what do you want in the fund? Okay. Do you want at least enough money to cover those potential deals that are out there? Do you want, which then if we do that, we'll leave you with about $50,000 in the fund? Because I'd add $450,000 and then leave you, if those deals close. If they don't close, then you'll have whatever's, you'll have $950,000 in there, right? So that's one question. Do you want me to cover what those potential deals are that are there and have $500,000 left over? Or do you want me to cover what's there and have $1 million left over? Or do you want me to just reserve the $950,000 or $500,000 in fund balance and not have it as part of the fund? And then if those deals close, then that money will be used first. I mean, now some of this can be discussed in finance, but since economic development, it's an economic incentive fund, we felt that we should at least bring it here for a discussion first. The ultimate discussion will take place in finance, but if there's a recommendation that the ED committee wants to make, then that's why we brought it here. And then there's the whole GOF issue and General Assembly issue.
Yeah, and I appreciate it, and that gives me lots of context. I mean, for me, you know, we might have five deals on the table, and if we're going to win, you know, potentially two of those five deals to the tune of $400,000, I can at least don't feel like I have enough data to say that we need $1 million in the fund as a balance. So,
okay. Supervisor Bono.
Yes, thank you. I think the first part of this about amending the incentive guidelines to allow the use of cash appropriations to the extent authorized by law for businesses moving to expanding loud. And I think that's an easy one. The harder question is, as I understand it, we have $500,000 in the incentive fund right now. We have two possible deals out there for $450,000 and $500,000. So in a worst case scenario, we could go red $450,000 in a worst case scenario.
Or zero.
Or none of these close, and we have $500,000 sitting there. I think the issue becomes one of the board directed that we try to use fund balance for this.
and that it would be part of the fund balance discussion each year. And that fund balance discussion is about to happen in about a month. So I really think we do have to give some direction this evening to say, hey, when you come to finance in December, here's what you ought to carry in from fund balance so that we can then look at that with all the other demands on fund balance and make a decision at that. And all three of us are on the finance committee, so we've been briefed on it. My personal feeling would be that we have the county administrator cover the 500 and the 450. 500 already being there, augmented 450. Now, the downside to that is we won't talk fund balance for another year, potentially. We could consume all of the fund balance, and if a deal comes in the middle of the year, then we don't have anything to deal with it. So under that scenario, if you said you wanted to get us back to 500K, then we'd add another 500K to the request. Am I phrasing all this right, Mr. Hemstreet, if I can speak to the chairman?
You may. Mr. Hemstreet.
Yes, sir. You have articulated what I was trying to articulate.
Okay. Thank you. But at the same time, if neither one closes, then all of a sudden we have a balance of $1.45 million in the account. Now, could we take some of that back later? Yes. Yeah, we can draw from that fund and bring it back to other uses. So if we can afford it, we probably ought to take to cover the liability and have a little bit left, and that should be the discussion of finance. But if nothing closes, then I think later we'll have to have a discussion and say, all right, let's draw it back to whatever, half a million, a million, whatever, and let's apply this to something else. Hopefully that would happen, though. We know about those two deals in time to apply it to something else in the proper manner.
Right.
That make all that sense.
So if we wanted to cover the potential existing deals and nothing else, we would need to add in exactly what amount?
$450,000.
And then if we wanted a $500,000 buffer, we'd add $500,000
to that. Yeah. Correct. So it'd be
I mean, I tend to think for the purposes of this discussion, which is simply to ask the county administrator to prepare this proposal for the finance committee, then we ought to go with that. We ought to ask him to cover the funds and give us $500,000 left over, which is essentially where we are to begin with if those close, and put that in the hopper for the fund balance discussion so we have the option to do that. It doesn't necessarily mean that's what we're going to do, but I don't see the harm in asking for that proposal. So let me go ahead and attempt to weave through this with a motion.
Yeah.
All right. I move that the Economic Development Committee recommend to the board to approve an amendment to the existing business incentive guidelines to allow the use of cash appropriations to the extent authorized by law to the existing section businesses moving or expanding in Loudoun County, Virginia, that does not require a match to the Governor's Development Opportunity Fund. I further move that the Board of Supervisors recommend in addition to our legislative program to ask for the replenishment of the Governor's Opportunity Fund. I further move that the board ask for a discussion with VDEP to adjust the criteria by which economic development projects are evaluated by the Commonwealth and by the county. And I further move the Economic Development Committee recommend to the board to direct the county administrator to bring to the Finance Committee a proposal to increase the cash allocation for Business Incentive Fund up to $1 million, round number, as part of the FY15 fund balance discussion in December.
Point.
Yes.
2 points of order. One's a question maybe for the county attorney. We've already held our public hearing on the legislative agenda. Does that cause us any issues if we...
I know we're adding at least three things to it as it is in December, so...
Yes, sir, you can bring that back.
Mike. Rookie.
Rookie mistake. That's right. No, sir, you could bring that back to the board. You've held the hearing to get the public input, but now it's before the board to decide what the agenda will be.
Okay, my second point on the motion is you asked to raise it to $1 million, but in your comments you wanted to add $450 plus a half.
Yeah, $950.
To add $950.
Yeah, but I just said $1 million because it's a round number. I mean,
okay.
It's $950 plus $500.
My intent was to cover our existing liability. But we already have five in it, right? So, right.
There's 500. There's
so five. $1 million becomes the number that would get us even at where we are now if those deals close. I want us to start and end at 500. That's what I was trying to do. I think I did that right.
But you hit both deals, though, you'll have nothing left.
No, we're adding a million, so.
You'll have a half million.
You'll have a half a million left.
550 left, based on the way he made the
yeah.
motion.
Yeah.
He's looking for a second. I'll second it.
Seconded by Supervisor Brown. Let me give an opening.
We don't have it in writing, so.
I know, and I did it on the fly. I think we needed that clarification. I understand the point about the public hearing, but I know we are making further adjustments to our legislative program, and I had mentioned that to the chairman, county administrator. It's something I thought we should do. I was informed that Prince William County has already adopted that position. So I think it's important that we send a message to the Commonwealth, that the General Assembly, that they should, in fact, fund this program. At the same time, obviously, the first part of this allows us to go outside the Opportunity Fund if the Opportunity Fund ceases to exist or have any cash available. And then, as I mentioned earlier, I think we should formally engage with the discussion with BDEP regarding the criteria and at least figure out what that process is and how that could be more advantageous for us. And then we've already hashed the last issue to death. So, Supervisor Williams.
All right. So, I know we're headed, and I think it's a bad place. I'm always, open-minded in terms of incentives to try to, and we've taken advantage of this fund, but I'm concerned that we're putting another $1 million on top of the cash incentive allocation at this time. And I also don't have a real sense for what our potential win rate is on the two opportunities that we've utilized this for. So what I would, although I will certainly support the motion that changes the incentive guidelines and the first leg of your motion, I do not feel like I have enough information to support the second portion of your motion, Chairman DeBonis. So I would request that the motion be divided.
Do you wish to divide, can I only divide the last section, or do I need to do four separate?
Excuse me. You could have three parts of your motion and then the one part voted on separately.
Okay. We can do that.
Yeah, the only thing I'm at this time not supporting is the additional allocation for the $1 million for the cash incentives.
Well, I would just clarify that we are not allocating that at this meeting. We are only asking the county administrator to bring the discussion to the Finance Committee, whereupon that recommendation will be made.
Here's the motion as read. To increase the cash allocation for the Business Incentive Fund up to $1 million.
No, Mr. Hebstreit.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding of the motion was to direct me to cover the current potential liabilities and maintain a $500,000 balance in the fund. So the motion
is heading to the Finance Committee.
That's correct. So yes. I'll bring that to the Finance Committee for consideration.
What you're doing, if I may, Chairman, is increasing the cap from 500,000 to 1.5 million. I know the final vote's going to be in Finance and then the full board, but the guidance we're giving right now is to have the county administrator reallocate, covering the existing liabilities, potential liabilities, 950,000 plus another 500,000 to keep in the balance. I cannot support that motion at the time, and I understand where we're headed. But I may very well support it in Finance, provided I get confidence that those are actual allocations that may be utilized after I understand the deals a little better.
All right. Okay. Mr. Bono.
Yeah, I'll just point out that all we're asking the county administrator to do is to include this in his portfolio of potential fund balance uses that will come to Finance. And then we can make our recommendations out of Finance. In no way tonight are we saying add this money. We are simply saying put it in the big picture of things when we see fund balance in the December Finance Committee meeting. Buddy, I know this is hard to answer, but when do you think we might have closure on those two deals? Just trying to get a rough sense.
I think one will close before December gets here. We're very close on that one. And the other one is on the CEO's desk for a decision, and I don't have a timeline for when that decision will be made.
The one we may know by the time we have the fund balance discussion.
I would expect that we would, yes.
Okay. Well, that'll help us out a little bit if we know that. The other thing I want to point out is I do like what you put in there, Supervisor Letourneau, about the General Assembly legislative program. Because the General Assembly has rated this fund. They rated it. and they've taken it to do a grant program to the Port of Virginia. Well, that benefits one place, whereas this fund benefits the entire Commonwealth and can be spread around the Commonwealth for better uses. But instead, it got pork barreled into some grant program to raid this fund. And as much as I think it's a great motion, and I think there could be support for it, given the current budget situation in Richmond, I'm not going to be optimistic that this is going to happen, but we can at least make our position known. So thank you. Very good.
Yeah, just to close, I might be the opposite of Supervisor Williams. I'm going to obviously made the motion to support it tonight. I may not ultimately support that at Finance Committee, but I want the option in front of us at Finance Committee, and I feel like if we don't make that recommendation, we won't have that option, and we can't have the discussion. So hence the motion in front of us. Okay, all in favor of the first three parts of the motion, signify aye. No one opposed, same two absent. All in favor of the final part of the motion, aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes 2-1. Supervisor Clark, Chairman York absent. I think we're done. Supervisor Williams opposed, yes. Okay. Final item is our monthly Department of Economic Development report. And once again, we have several different months here. I would just ask if there's anything you want to highlight. I will highlight before you start the fact that the commercial office vacancy rate is moving in the right direction, but that the overall unemployment rate is not. And I think Supervisor Bonin and I were at a presentation along with Mr. Reiser about the state of Loudoun office, and I think the presenter at that, Mr. Basile, made a very interesting presentation about the state of the region right now, which historically has been very strong, but is actually rather precarious from an unemployment and economic perspective. Anyway. Anything else you'd like to?
No, and I think that that's very accurate and kind of speaks to what I was speaking to before about the importance of making sure we diversify our economy, because the region has been so dependent on public sector spending. We've had a good number of groundbreakings and ribbon cuttings, and all of you have attended a lot of them, and we do appreciate that. Two new office buildings under construction on Loudoun County Parkway, three new data center buildings now open, and we do expect to have at least one major announcement before the end of the year. Hopefully we have two more, and the governor will be in the county on Friday to announce the awarding of another grant. So we're encouraged by the activity that we're seeing.
Excellent. Any questions for Mr. Reiser? Anything else to come before the committee? We are adjourned.